and gentlemen. Podcasting since 2005. You are listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts Godfrey, Pete Rock, Paris, Pasta.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio. Your host Danny, aka Godfrey, and also joining me this week is Patrick, aka Paustin J.
Paustin, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good. No P, no Paris.
No.
Hopefully,
we've kicked them off the show. I don't know what that feud to get back on, but hopefully next week, maybe we'll see.
Yeah, Paris, and P. God, there's too many P's. Please join us next week. All right,
we miss you.
That's all I have to say. But this week, this episode, we're going to be talking about fan mail. No topics, no. Mm-hmm. It's just strictly for the listeners.
We want to hear from y'all.
Yes. So please continue to send us questions, comments, the email or voicemail, because the more you do that, the more stuff we have for us to talk about. And at the same time, we'll give you a shout out to the listeners worldwide. Doesn't matter if it's here in the States or other places in the world. I know we have a lot of listeners from London and Australia and a lot of places. So please continue to send us questions. All right. So give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. Or email us fanmail at gamertagradio.com. Make sure to go to gamertagradio.com or play.it to listen to our past episodes and, yeah, share it with your friends. The more, the better. You can subscribe the following places to listen to the podcast: iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or hey, if you have the Spotify beta, you can also find us there. All right, and it's now time for fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right, so we have a lot of questions. I think we're going to start out with this one. This one is going to be a very interesting topic. This is a very sensitive topic, Paustin. Am I right?
It does hit some chords with some people. I agree.
Okay, so we're going to play it right now.
Hey, what's up, Gamertag Radio? This is Jacob giving you guys a call from Charlotte. Just wanted to say, really enjoyed the year. Enjoyed the extra content that you guys have been giving us with the two shows a week instead of just the one. You know, at my job, I really... I got to zone out, so I listen to your podcast quite often, listen to all the interviews and everything. I love it. First and foremost, just wanted to let you guys know that. This call is actually about a little bit of a slight controversy. I don't think it's really controversy, but it's, you know, brought about by the whole Uncharted 4 stuff where, you know, they have an actress playing, voicing the character of somebody that's obviously outside of her race. And it's a little bit of a kerfuffle based on that. Now, I'm a big advocate in, you know, bringing more diversity into video games. You know, I like to see, probably can't tell, but I'm a black guy myself. You know, I want to see, you know, some more diversity in video games, especially as main characters in video games. I wanted to know how you guys felt about it exactly. Do you think there should be more diversity in video games, or do you think it's just okay to stick with the status quo? You know, because the way I see it, normally, you know, there needs to be a reason in a game for a character to be black or outside, well, to be not white, let me say. You know, black minority, any type of minority. It needs to be a reason for them to be a minority in a game, but there needs to be no reason for them to be, for the character to be a white guy in the game, or even a woman sometimes, you know, but normally a character is a white guy in the game. For example, like if somebody were to make a game about a banker, you know, that banker's 97% of the time going to end up being a white guy in the game, and that's who it's going to be written for, a white guy. So even though, you know, a lot of bankers are just different, you know, nationalities out here, there needs to be a reason for him to be, like, a black or Hispanic or Native American or something along those lines. Like, you have to specifically write it into the story and make all types of excuses for a guy to be a minority. And then when you do so, it's like, hey, I don't know. It's just something that's just a little strange to me that, you know, you got to explain away why somebody is black in a game or why they're Mexican or whatever nationality that they are. But if they're just white by default, they're white by default.
Pawson, your thoughts, because I want to get your, I know you had this question similar to this conversation during PlayStation Experience. I think you recorded with Andrew at the show Radio.
Yeah, shout out to podcast. Uriah. We did talk about this. Mandy was involved, actually, too. We got pretty heated on this.
Oh, ooh, okay.
It's a good show. I'll have to link you to guys. Go listen to that. But in a nutshell, for me, what this came down to is when you have a game of the size of Uncharted 4 is, and when you put out a casting call for a character that pretty much all you know about her is she's South African, female, and black, you're going to get responses from people all over the industry. Someone of Laura Bailey's caliber, who is one of the largest prolific video game voice actresses out there on the planet right now. She's worked in hundreds of things, hundreds of video games, anime, television, all kinds of stuff like that. So when she's going to get a response from this, she's going to be one of the first people her agent's going to hit her up and be like, look, we want you to come in and record for this. We only know this much about the character. So Laura comes in, and apparently, according to Neil Druckmann, the lead designer, she kills the role. Essentially, it was made for her at that point. So even though they had other people come in, certainly people of South African descent, black actresses on top of that as well, none of them could put the same conviction into the voice that Laura did as a white woman. So the controversy was, why was the character black to begin with? They said, we designed her as a black South African woman from the beginning of the game. And the voice is something we had to find in the middle of development. And we thought she worked so well that we didn't see a problem. And for me, I don't see a problem either. That's the point of voice acting in video games. It's not to take jobs from people. It's to show that your physical appearance is irrelevant. If you can do a truly impressive, amazing voice that resonates with people, and you attach that to a well-designed character, you create a new character in the fiction of video games. That could be the next Master Chief or Nathan Drake or Samus Aran or Lara Croft. Those next iconic character. You hear that voice, you see that character, and you're like, oh man, that is a video game icon. And I think every developer wants to make the next character like that. And certainly Uncharted 4 has made a lot of really popular characters out there. So for this one, they wanted to have star power. That wasn't intentional, but they got it out of Laura Bailey. I haven't heard the voice yet. I haven't played the game. I can't really speak on the whole issue of does she work in the context of the game. But I trust Naughty Dog to make that decision for me, to make sure that they have the best possible version of Uncharted 4 when I play it. So for me, that's not an issue there. The issue larger is, why aren't we designing more roles to go to, either darker skin characters, mixed ethnic characters? Why not have the diversity in the actual character role itself written in that style? So then, it's not like you don't have to go out of your way to find an actress of that color, an actor of that color. It's just you're going to send out the casting call like, hey, we need people of a certain skin tone or religion or, race, creed, whatever you want to use as your go-to point. You'll get a larger response from that. And hopefully by making those roles in those larger video games, it attracts talent. So even people that maybe would never do voice acting work to begin with, they hear about this cool role that sounds right up their alley and they audition for it and they get it. And all of a sudden they now have a new way to get their name out there, to expose themselves to the video game voice acting industry, which grows every year because, as we know, more video games are being made, lots more money being pumped into them, and they have the budget now to hire more prolific voice actors because, you can have an amazing game with a great story, but the voice acting is bad. That kills the process right there. It's not like a book where you're reading from your own personal, mental narration. If someone says a bad line to you, it's just going to make you cringe and go, oh, wow, this game kind of, ugh, for a second, I don't know if it's good anymore. So voice acting is critical, and the best companies understand that. And I think at the end of the day, when you're writing these game character roles, don't be afraid to mix them up. Don't have to make, like Jacob said, it's like the character doesn't have to be written to be black just because that's a certain aspect of the story. Like sometimes you can just make that, this is the character. They happen to be, black, white, Hispanic, whatever you want to say, Asian. It doesn't matter. That just happens to be who they are, and the character themselves develops around that. So for me, my final point before I let you speak on this, Danny, is
yes.
I think the main issue here is not so much as there is a people, hesitant to write these ethnic roles. I think it's games are so caught up on making the game unique to you, the player, that too many games have decided to not even bother making main characters anymore and just saying, oh, you designed the main character, you know, like Destiny or World of Warcraft before it. We're just giving you this world so you can have fun in your own unique way. You don't really affect anything other than your personal story. And I feel like a lot of games are playing it safe by going that role of, you know, you make your own silent character. They don't really impact anything. And if they do, it's in a pre-scripted way that we've kind of been like, ooh, choice A, choice B, and incentivize that versus the older mechanics of either making a really cool story-driven game based around a certain character like Kratos in God of War or Nathan Drake in Uncharted. It's more of like, now, who do you want to be? You know, you are the special snowflake. We want to design the game around you. You know, that's fine, but every game doesn't need to be like that. Like more games to have that heavy narrative fiction side, like The Witcher 3 of last year, which, you know, I'm playing as Geralt. I can't do anything other than play as Geralt in the way I want to play as him. But at the end of the day, he's an existing character. He has his background. I have to respect that play in the game. And the game was really fun because of that. You know, and you turn that on to Fallout 4, where it's like, you know, I'm technically playing as whoever I want to be, but I still have expectations of my character to do certain things, to go in a certain storyline. Not really that many games anymore either go either spectrum of being like, it's Morrowind, where you're a stranger in a strange land, good luck, we're not holding your hand, all the way up to, you know, Uncharted, which is like, you are Nathan Drake. This is an adventure. You are along for the ride. So I feel like there's plenty of space in between those two spectrums, and I hope game designers take advantage of the fact that now we have these infinite resources, practically. It's all your imagination's the limit now. So please go out of your way to make really unique, interesting stories, either written for ethnic characters or just have a large cast of characters that can be filled out by people from all different backgrounds. So yeah, I think there's two solutions there. And I think it really depends on what the strength of the game developer is and what they place focus on.
Agree. Like for example, a game like Grand Theft Auto, the main characters, those are the, like, they look like that.
Yes.
Basically, the voice actors, right? But here's another one, that perfect example, that nobody complained about this, but now they're complaining about the voice actors that worked on Uncharted 4. Mario, the voice actor of Mario, he's not Italian. He's not, but it's a well-known character. Everybody knows the voice of Mario, and he also worked on other characters too, right, in the game, in different games from Nintendo, right? The main actor, I forgot his name, Charles
Martinet.
There you go. Another one too, like for example, Final Fantasy, did they actually hire 100% Japanese people to voice act for these characters? No, they did a couple, you know, different mixes. To me, I'm more about the talent. I don't care about race. Like, that's not my thing. If this person that worked in the game is really good, it could be black, white, Latino, I don't even care. If they're good and it makes the game like, wow, I'm not even thinking about race, it's fine with me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, if it's something that is degrading and it's like basically making fun of like other races, then I'll be like, okay, that's too much. I'm not down with that. You know, that will bother me a lot. But if it's something that's entertaining and fun and it's just a pretty cool game, I don't care about that. You know, so that's all I have to say about that. But yes, I'm curious to see what Paris and Pete, because see, like all of us, we have different backgrounds, different cultures. Like, you know, Paulson, he's white. I'm Latino. P, he's half Latino and half Korean. And Paris, he's black. So it's good to have a mix of different races here at GTR, you know. So I'm curious to say what they have to say about this whole topic and stuff. So, but also we have other emails and voicemails. So let's go with an email. Paulson, you can find one.
Yeah, Kenny says, hi, GTR crew. It's been what I consider a pretty long-time fan of the podcast. He says he discovered podcasts back when the Xbox One and PS4 were first announced, and he was looking for a new medium to absorb information on gaming and tech and stumbled across our podcast at the time.
Okay.
He says he won't lie. He did unsubscribe once because he felt like there was too many people trying to talk at one time, and it was a lot of console war type talk. Yeah, we did have our issues with our console wars.
Yeah, no, but I want to say this, like, I feel that at the time we were just passionate and excited at the same time with both consoles. And if you listen to a podcast from like episode one till now, like you see we change, we evolve throughout the years, you know? So it's, you, there's going to be some bad times and some good times, you know? And we learn from that, you know? And that's it. Continue.
Yeah. And he just goes on to say, yeah, but he decided to give us another shot. And he says he's happy that he did. He just has to say that, you know, from the last couple of years that he's been listening to us, he says we've all matured and developed in such a professional podcast group that we're on his weekly listen group. Thank you. He says your podcast and only one other Xbox podcast out there are on my must for every week. I have to listen to them.
Awesome. So,
appreciate that, man. But he gets down to two questions you want to talk about. First was, he asked, what would you say is the first truly next gen experience you have had? You know, one that you think just completely changed the game. He says for him personally, it was playing Time Splitters for the first time. Shout out Time Splitters. I love that series. Okay. And wondering who the crazy person was for mapping aim and look to the second joystick. So for him, that first instance with that twin stick shooter mechanic really blew his mind. I totally understand that. That was me with the first Halo game. You know, Sal, he says he can't imagine not having to use the old school way of using the face buttons to aim. But that's a great question. The concept of what does next gen truly mean to you? For me, that's, I mean, I've had the privilege and the honor of, you know, living through the majority of the major console generations, starting from, you know, the Nintendo back in the day onto the Super Nintendo. And, you know, everyone knows the story here. But for me, like, it would come down to two experiences. I would say the original Halo on Xbox really submitted that idea of, like, I am addicted to first-person shooters, and there's really no other genre like it out there for that sense of rush and adrenaline and teamwork you can get from playing with your friends. But also, I'd have to give World of Warcraft credit as well, because the first time you experience one of those living, breathing online worlds, I know, Dan, you have experience with the Phantasy Star series, so you know what I'm talking about here.
Yes.
That concept is just so overwhelming to you to experience, essentially like a three-dimensional version of the internet, which I know sounds cheesy as hell, but just that sense of having that social connectivity to other people that persist, where like you're not playing the game, but you're thinking, oh man, I wonder what my friends in Azeroth are doing right now. You know, I wonder what my friends are doing in this other, you know, in the EverQuest world, other things like that. Just that whole idea of just transporting you into another world that you have something to look forward to on top of, you know, just, you know, besides getting home to play a multiplayer match or two. It was something greater than that. It was a sense of an attachment to a different world, living a different life, and just making those great friends that would stick with you for years. So for me, it was the first Halo and World of Warcraft were kind of those standout games, and me go, wow, this is a next generation experience. And, you know, I always look forward to every year, you know, hopefully there's going to be that game that changes up the game once again for, you know, the whole internet, you know, the whole multiplayer concept out there. So I'm really excited for this year. I think there's a lot of games that are going to push that idea of the persistent MMO like world, but, you know, have, you know, greater gameplay concepts of design on top of that.
I have two times that I felt like it was like next gen. The first one, I think it was when the Sega Dreamcast came out, and I played like games like Soul Calibur and Sonic Adventure. You know, I felt it was like a different time for me. Like, it was like, man, they're taking gaming into the next level, right? And the second time was playing Xbox Live for the first time when they sent me the beta. So I had NFL Fever, and I had also a racing game. I can't remember. I think was it
Project Gotham, or was it with the Sega racing games?
No, I think it was a Pro-Am.
Oh, Pro-Am. Okay.
Was it Pro-Am? No, wait. What's the name of it? No, it's not Pro-Am. Oh, my God.
It wasn't that Sega Rally GT game that came with Jet Set Radio? Like, it was a two-for-one double disc?
This was, like, during the beta days.
Okay.
You know?
To be fair, there were a lot of Xbox Live games early on that were, like, terrible. So, you know, remembering the good ones helped raise it to the top. But I'm with you, Danny. That first time playing Xbox Live, that was magic. I remember being afraid to talk to the guy on the mic with me the first time I ever played a game online. It was, like, I think it was 2K Football. But I was scared to be like, hello? Hi, wow, we can talk. We're playing football. Yeah. Nice to meet you, random person. And just that was a crazy experience. I can totally agree with you of putting Xbox Live as an action experience.
I remember playing NFL 2K, 2K1, I believe, for the first time. Was it 2K1? I can't remember. I know it was an NFL 2K game that was playing on my Sega Dreamcast, right? And they had it online, and I'm there playing with somebody else across the country, and we're talking because of the keyboard. There was no voice chat.
Man, look at you. Wow.
Yeah. So I remember playing that, and it was like, man, that was a very special moment in my life, you know? And then, of course, finally Star Online, that like changed me completely, you know? But I think Xbox Live Because, you know, I think we all talk about, like, gaming consoles and graphics and all that. But to me, what was important is, like, something new technology-wise. You know, Xbox Live, when it came out back in 2002, it was something different and new, and nobody else was doing it. And you could change your voice. You could put, like, special effects on your voice. Remember that?
Yes.
I mean, not that many people actually used it. Like, I never used it. But it was funny listening to other people. They had, like, their voice disguised and stuff. It was so weird.
People were actually funny back. Remember that, Danny? Everyone wasn't a jerk. And you had met interesting, unique people. It was like playing a sitcom. Yeah. Every night at home, you'd meet these strange cast of characters because everyone talked. Everyone was willing to put themselves out there and like to get a laugh out of people. Or playing the first Ghost Recon on Xbox Live as a team. You had to be super involved, like talking with each other, like to actually win at that game. Same thing in Rainbow Six 3. Crimson Skies, Mech Assault. I mean, so many iconic. But basically, anything before Halo 2 came out and changed the world. Those early Xbox Live games, we always still felt like that early adopter mentality, being like, "We're an elite club, man. We're on Xbox Live."
It was a very special,
very special time. I cherish it.
And here's the sad thing about now: like, I play, you know, PlayStation 4 games online or Xbox games online, and now with the Steam machine, I've been playing online too, but. There's people that don't talk. They just don't talk. And it's cool. I understand that some days, honestly, there's some days I don't want to talk to anyone. I just want to play online, which is cool. I understand that part, you know. But I would love to meet other people and have conversations and stuff that the same type of vibe that I had back then when I started playing online games. You know, like I want to continue that, you know, and meet other people within the community and just learn about them. You know, there's a couple people that I've been playing online with them through, you know, through Destiny and Halo 5 and other games and stuff. And look, even Battlefront, I play with a lot of people online too. And it was I love chatting with people. There's some times that I don't want to, but there's some times that I just want to get to know the person. Like, hey, who are you? Where you live? Or why you like this game? Hey, show me some stuff that I don't know about the game. Show me some tricks, some tips, you know?
Yeah, man. If I'm playing a co-op game, you know, and I've got to do the same thing for the next 3-4 hours, let's talk, man. Let's have a conversation going.
Exactly.
We might have things in common. We might play other games together online. I mean, people, like, and I know you love your party chat and you love, you know, your privacy, but, like, sometimes just say something and you might find a friend. You never know until you try.
My brother, before we go to the second question, my brother hit me up. Well, actually, we worked together at Discovery and stuff, and we were chatting because we play Halo 5 together a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've been taking a break for the past week or two and stuff. But
I've been jumping in here and there. It's a weird game. You can't go from Halo 1 to 3 and then go to 5 and then.
I don't know. Honestly, I really like Halo 5. You know, and online multiplayer wise and stuff.
Adding Big Team Paddle was a good move. I've been playing a good bit of that and been having a pretty good time.
So I was talking with him and he was like, "Man, I met some people that are really, really good," and we start talking and they were asking me why my level is so low, and I'm asking them, you know, I'm telling them, like, hey, look, you know, the thing is, I've been busy, you know, with the family and stuff, and I just right now he's been playing Halo 5 casually, but it's cool that he got to meet new people and had him on the list, and now they've been playing a lot lately, you know. And he was like, "Man, that was a lot of fun, you know, meeting new people, and they're ranked really, really high, you know, so they're helping me rank up too." So I'm like, "Oh, that's cool, man, that's cool," you know. So his second question, what's the second question?
Second part was, he's basically saying, if you had to pick one event that you wanted to attend, gaming-wise, takes place in America, which one would it be and why? He's talking about things like E3, Consumer Electronics Show, San Diego Comic-Con, things like that, and he specifies also, which one would you recommend a non-journalist check out? Because again, you know, E3 is amazing, but if you're paying $900 to get in the door, you're standing in a lot of lines, let's be honest.
Yes,
so
yes,
maybe not the best management of your time. For me, I'm going to point you definitely more towards the Comic-Con side of things, or PAX, because at least PAX has, you know, variety between South, East, West, Prime, whatever you want to call it. And then, of course, Comic-Con has the name recognition, you know, basically be like, you know, even though it's not game-focused, it's still a large enough entity and, you know, has been around for so long that it draws all that naturally to it. So it more comes down to, like, what do you really care about? Do you just care about a certain couple of games like Blizzard's, like BlizzCon or Quake for QuakeCon? Or do you kind of just want to go for the big party aspect of something like PAX or Comic-Con, where it's like you have the itinerary, you know, you want to go to this panel, this panel, this panel, buy this, this, and this from the shop. You know, you can only get it there once a year. It's more just like what mentality you want to go into. Relaxed, casual, do you want to meet people? Do you just want to hang out? They're all good, but like for me, it's the PAX or the Comic-Cons are giving your best bet in terms of giving you the best bang for your buck, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I know there's Dragon Con too, right?
Yeah, I'm shaming my hometown of Atlanta here. Yes, Dragon Con is the largest sci-fi fantasy convention in the Southeast, has been for like 15 years. It's a huge deal. It's every Labor Day weekend in Atlanta. I haven't gone the last 2 years, shamefully, but I've been 2 years in the past, and I absolutely loved it. I probably will go this year just because I missed the excitement of it. But yeah, I mean, if you're in the Southeast area, there's plenty of things all up and down Florida. There's a lot of conventions in Atlanta. You have the Dragon Con. Also, if you're a fighting game fan, Final Round in March of this year is basically the biggest fighting game tournament in Georgia, in the Southeast. You know, getting people ready for, you know, Evo Fighting Evolution in Las Vegas this year, the summer. Because again, Street Fighter V is coming out in February, meaning it's actually going to get enough time to probably make it onto the pro circuit for this year at Evo. So for me as a Street Fighter fan, it's really exciting to know that, like, you know, the best players in the world are going to have their hands on this game. We can start seeing some like super high level play. So it kind of depends on like what you're in the mood for wanting to see. So for me as a fighting game fan, I'm probably going to go to Final Round 2 just to have that spectacle of being around the best of the best and seeing, you know, how good they actually are at Street Fighter firsthand. But for you, you know, he's moved to Arizona recently, so he's closer to this kind of stuff. I would look into things like QuakeCon in Texas, as well as San Diego Comic-Con in San Diego, and possibly PAX Prime in Seattle if you can make that drive. If not, I think they have PAX South in Texas as well. A lot of options. Yes. That's the thing. You know, pretty much gaming has gotten so big now, and comics as well have gotten huge as a result of that, and sci-fi geek stuff, that you're going to have something no matter where you live. If you just do the research, there's either going to be a huge thing, maybe a state or two away, or probably something closer than you think. Just do the research. There's always things going on convention-wise all around the country. But a lot of choices. But I would say it has to be either probably Comic-Con or PAX if you had to pick one.
I wouldn't recommend E3 if you're paying for this, don't go to E3.
I mean,
if you get free tickets, go to E3.
If you can just go
enjoy it
from
someone's
dime as a blogger or a podcast or whatever, then yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Another one, he lives in Arizona, so it will be cool if you're into the whole fighting thing. Yeah, go to Evo. It's in Las Vegas. You could go over there too.
That's the thing. And for me, that's two things off my list. You know, I want to go to Vegas anyways, but I also want to go see the world's biggest fighting game tournament. So, you know, two birds, one stone. Maybe I'll get to go to it pretty soon. But we'll see.
That's another one. This is from Mad Tiger. Possibly, I think you could probably answer this question, but he's like, I have had Destiny for a month now on Xbox One, but I don't know how to access my Fire Team setting, and it's set up to public. What do you mean by that?
I mean, I guess he wants people to be able to join him from the tower. I would say the easiest thing to do is just if you're trying to find a group, just what I usually do is just, I haven't played Destiny in so long, so I have to visualize this now in my head. But if you go to basically the setting where it shows your fire team, and you should be able to toggle, you know, right above your name, it should be able to turn between closed, invite only, friends only. If you put it to invite only, then what I usually do is I go into the tower and I just find people of my level and just message them and say, hey, do you want to run the Nightfall, and send them an invite. And I'll do that for, like, you know, all 10 people in the tower around me. And then I'll wait. I'll usually get 1 to 2 people respond like, hell yeah, I'd love to do that. And I'll have a full group just like that. So, it's the easiest way to meet new people. You just kind of have to take that risk of being like, you know, you're going to feel like you're spamming people, and you kind of are, but you kind of have to anyways. Because I guarantee you there's going to be people that have sit in the tower being like, man, I wish someone would invite me to do the Nightfall or the Heroic or the Raid right now, but I don't know anybody. And you get that random invite, and lo and behold, it's just what you're looking for. So, I mean, again, this is just me talking as a former WoW player. Sometimes you just have to just hit up random people and be like, hey, are you busy? You want to do this with me? And they'll either be like, yeah, sure, I haven't done it before. Or, you know what, sure, I've already done it, but I'll run it again for you to help you. And then you made a friend just like that. So, boom, just don't hesitate to ask people, essentially. You're always going to be making new friends in those type of games where people have that thing where they play every single day. So Destiny has that. You should be able to find people no problem. If you're not finding... If no one's getting into your room whatsoever, if you're inviting them, it might be an NAT issue for you with your router. So then I'd recommend you Google Xbox Live router ports. So that way you can go into your router and open up the ports you might need to be able to connect to other people. Because some games forbid you from connecting if you don't have the right NAT settings.
I had that issue a couple months ago.
A lot of people have that issue. It's much easier to Google food than you might think, because there's a lot of sites. Even Xbox.com has an official page list to be like, these are the router ports you need to open. Here's the easiest way to do it based off just searching your router number and your router brand. And it's easier than you would think. But yeah, hit us back up if you have any problems playing, because we have people playing on PlayStation and Xbox, and we'd love to play with you sometime for Destiny.
And what you could do too is join our group, Gamertag Radio. You know, for Destiny,
yes.
You could join in, and you can meet other people within the community, or just send us your gamertag. You know, we'll give you a shout out, and to see if other listeners would like to add you, and you guys could play together online. I think that's a great way to meet other people that also listens to the show.
Absolutely.
Right, Boston? I think that's a great idea.
I need to get more people on my, speaking of that, shout out to people on Steam out there. I need to add you guys because I only have like 23 Steam friends.
Have you added me? Have you added me?
Yeah, you're on there. I got the crew. The crew's all added on there. You, Dave, Pete, Mandy, and Paris. I got you guys down. But like, again, if I'm going to start getting into PC gaming, you know, compared to my friends list that have 250 plus people on both PlayStation and Xbox, PC is a little sad with only 23 people. So, shout out to you guys out there. My Steam ID is Paulstinj, PAUSTINJ. Same it is on Xbox Live. So definitely add me. I'd love to get more people on there. We can start some PC gaming going for 2016, man.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Gamer Tag Radio. Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
Yeah, or add me, Godfrey. And that's easy. G-O-D-F-R-E-E on Steam and Xbox Live. And PlayStation Network, you could add me, Godfrey, GTR, altogether. You know, so pausing. Let me ask you this question, because I'm very curious. Why you have a different name on PlayStation Network?
Okay, so there's a story here. I've always been pretty OCD about giving myself names online where it's like they can't have numbers in them. They can't have X's in them. So I usually have to sit there for an extremely long time to think of names.
Yeah.
And it was at the point where it was like I was kind of frustrated with the fact that I had been using Paulstinj for so long. Nothing wrong with my name. I like it. I just, you know, I was getting a PS3. I had held off on getting one the entire console cycle. You know, the PS4 was just about to come out. So I was like, all right, fine, I'll get a PS3. I need a PlayStation account. So I just wanted to make my name something different. So eventually, I mean, it started off being just Koss, you know, just Pulse with a K instead. But that was taken by somebody. I was like, ah, crap. You know what? Like, I don't want to sit here for the next 30 minutes trying names. So I ended up just, you know, throwing the word Sev on there because I always liked that name because it was a character from Star Wars Republic Commando back in the day. If you remember that game at all, he is one of your clone troopers. So I just made that name and I just stuck with it because I realized, oh, wait, this is PlayStation. You can never change your name ever once you make it. People have been complaining about this for years. Xbox lets you pay $10. Steam lets you change it whenever you want, which I just think is the best solution. And I would much rather have a dedicated, permanent, unchanging Steam ID type name and be able to change my username whenever I want. I think that's the most 2016 of the options available right now. PlayStation feels a little backwards. So, I mean, that's why my PlayStation name is Kossif. It's just because I wanted something different, and I'm stuck with it. So,
but you have a lot of listeners that added your...
Yes, I have tons of people from Destiny I've played with through PlayStation as well. It's I have to like mark my account as being like, oh yeah, this is Paulson J too. I just use a weird name on PlayStation because I wasn't thinking. And now I wish I had made it Paulson J's too because it's Nintendo, Steam, Xbox are all the same. PlayStation wanted to be the outlier. And I had to pick the one console where that's permanent. So it's kind of like, well, I'm stuck with it. I would never be the type of person to like lose my game licenses by changing my name because some people are crazy enough to do that. But it's like, no, I already own a bunch of digital games on PS4. I'm stuck with the name. It's no biggie. But again, that's why I'm so excited for Steam. Is Steam's like flavor of the week name. You know, it's like, what do I want to be called today? I'm going to change whatever you want to be. So shout out to Steam for that functionality. And come on, Sony. You know you want to let people change their name. Even if people had to pay $10 on Xbox, people would still be willing to do that.
Yeah, I think that would be cool if they charge.
At least charge. So you have, the disincentives so people don't, do it religiously, but, not having that option at all. Apparently people, attested to the fact that the architecture and the servers that Sony uses are so archaic and old that, if you think of it in Microsoft Excel terms, that, the primary key is your online ID. So, if you change that, the whole database would destroy its, would corrupt itself. So, they didn't think ahead of this well enough. They didn't think people would care about the fact that they made their accounts when they're 13, and now they're, 23, 26.
Yes.
And, maybe don't want to have that same name they had when they were a teenager. But, Sony is we don't care. So,
but, see, that's the reason why Microsoft shut down the original Xbox Live games, from the original Xbox,
Yeah.
Because they wanted to make changes to the service, make it better, make changes, but they couldn't do that if those games are still around, So I think Sony should make a big decision, hey, can they do this without affecting the PlayStation 3 online services, or can they just do this in the background, in the back end, like that they just could change it and everybody could change their PSN names, their PSN IDs,
I just think
without making that sacrifice, take that.
What
down.
Xbox did make sense is when they had that big transition from Xbox One to 360, there was a point where all of those really old school rare gamer tags that people always wanted, but were all dead, abandoned accounts. They released all those names. So essentially all the names that people wanted for years were freed up, snatched back up immediately, but at least the chance was there. And I feel like Sony could benefit greatly from the fact that, they've had the same online architecture, since arguably the PS2. I don't know how much functionally it changed between PS2 and PS3.
It's actually from 3.
Okay, because I know they shut the whole thing down for 2. So I was curious to know, how many names are they sitting on right now on accounts that are never going to be used because, again, Xbox was never free. PlayStation was for a time. So there's going to be a lot of those names taking up by people who are never going to use them again. So I think maybe they just should go ahead and release all of that back into the wild, give people a free name change, optional, but then sell for $10.
I think they won't do that because here's the thing, even on Nintendo ID or Xbox Live and PSN, those companies don't want to do that because they don't want their quote unquote subscription numbers to go down. They want to say, oh, we have 12 million or 20 million
wow, counting dead accounts and their subscription numbers.
It sucks because there's
garbage.
See, on Xbox Live, there's premium accounts and there's the free accounts, but you can't really play online, but it's still available out there, the accounts. Same thing with PSN. There's a lot of free accounts. And there's a lot of people that still to this day don't know about that they have to pay to play online. There's a lot of casual gamers that don't know
PC gaming has become easier than ever to use. Other alternatives. But again, a lot of people aren't going to be dissuaded. They've been console gamers their whole lives. This isn't going to change their minds.
I agree.
It's a minor gripe, especially when you compare the functionality of Steam. Even something like, Nintendo, where it's like your name is a series of numbers, but you can have any nickname you want. So even that, which is similar to the Steam mechanic, it seems to make more sense for long term. But I don't know.
I hope they change it. I hope they change.
Well, they need a whole renaissance of online. We'll see.
No, because I have an ID. It says Godfrey for 3DS and also Wii U.
But you're still a friend code to add each other is what I meant.
No, not really. Nope. I just put my name. That's it. Put other people's name. That's it. Before, yes, you have to do a name, numbers and all that, but not anymore. Now it's just yours is Pawson J. I could add you, Pawson, I see my friend list and everything on the 3DS and Nintendo. Now, the thing is that I'm worried about, do I have to do that again? Do I have to create a brand new account, are they going to have a brand new service that for this new console? I'm a little worried about that stuff. Can I transfer my account to this new one? We don't know. We don't know anything about this yet, So we'll see in the future. But anyway, let's move on. We have here one more email I'm going to read. This is from Jonathan. Shout out to Jonathan. Everybody out there, remember, email us if you want us to read your email or play your voicemail on the show and stuff. So Jonathan said, hey, guys, great job with the Game of the Year episode. Very interesting to hear everyone's favorites. Seeing the whole crew pick The Witcher number one, The Witcher 3 as a number one game. He said that he's on the same page with us. Thanks for all the great content. All the best for 2016. You know what? I had a great time recording that episode with the whole crew.
It was fun,
wasn't it? Pawson, Pete, Paris. It was a lot of fun. I noticed 1 through 4, everybody had different type of games. But number one, we all had the same game. So it's cool that finally there's 1 year that we all agree with the top game of the year, you know? But it was cool hearing Pawson, like his games. There was a listener today, he mentioned to me on Twitter, he's like, hey, why you guys didn't put Bloodborne? You know, I didn't play Bloodborne. I think the only person that played that was you, Pawson, right?
I think so, yeah. And I was the one that was really excited about it, too, back in February when it came out.
Why wasn't it in the top five?
Why wasn't it in top five? I guess I feel like the only thing holding it back was its own difficulty level. And I guess I wasn't as passionate about getting through it as I wanted it to be. And I've talked about this before. Basically, it just came down to me the fact because I somehow got my character too far, basically using some weird, like a monster appears and teleports you to an area that's much higher level than you should be, and you have to fight your way out of it.
And you got stuck.
And I'm stuck.
I think you did mention
I mentioned this on the show. It's basically like, yes, you know, the game screwed me over because I was too curious about something. And it was like, oh, great. The solution to your problem is get better, kid. I mean, that's literally what I had to Google. It was like, oh, you have to fight your way out of here. I'm like, crap, I'm not that good. I'm going to have to come back to this. And unfortunately, a lot of other games happen throughout the year. So I guess being in February might have hurt it a little bit. But Dying Light came out in February, too. And to me, that was one of my game of the years because I love that game. Put so many hours into it. It's near perfect, in my opinion, as a zombie game.
Yes.
Especially because it has so little competition this day and age, which is sad. We'll see if Dead Island 2 can hopefully continue that pace.
That's not going to come out this year.
I hope it does.
It's not going to come out this year.
I'll be sad if it doesn't, but you know,
it's not. Remember, it got it. The company that was working on that game, they basically stopped developing that game, and I think they're going to get somebody else to work on that, and who knows when's that going to come out.
Okay. All right. Well, Bloodborne was my honorable mention on PlayStation, just like Rise of the Tomb Raider was for my on Xbox, because they were both great exclusive games that deserve recognition. It's just the third party this year was too strong. It's because, again, it comes back to The Witcher. No matter if you played it on Xbox, PlayStation, or PC, that game blew your mind. Your expectations for what an RPG could even be, you know, were changed dramatically, you know, regardless of what your background was. Even if you were obsessed about open world RPGs up until Witcher 3, Witcher 3 still did things you've never seen before. Even if you had only played JRPGs your whole life, and then all of a sudden you decided to give Witcher 3 a chance, I'm sure that blew your mind too. Some of the choices it gave you, the story treated you like an adult, and never had to held your hand through anything. It was always told in a straight up manner of being like, you know, sometimes you don't make the right decisions. Life isn't fair. You know, get used to it. That would just really struck a chord with a lot of people. It'd be like, man, I like games that treat me seriously. You know, the games that don't have to, you know, go to that lowest common denominator of having, you know, overabundant tutorials, too much on-screen help text, too much trying to make sure that you're being guided from point A to point B to point C. Some games just need to put you out there and say, go forth. And, you know, Witcher and Fallout both did a great job at, but Witcher, in my opinion, took that to the next level. And that is now the new hurdle that games have to jump for 2016 is over the storytelling, the design, the writing of Witcher. And I think that's great, you know, because I guess when we all agree on a game of the year like that, that means it was a cultural force, kind of like what The Last of Us was a couple of years ago. When a game comes out and just changes the industry at every level, that's a great thing. It gets every other developer to go, oh, crap, we need to pay attention because they just did something I didn't think we could do. And we need to one-up them. And that's how you get better games every year. And that's why I'm so excited for this year.
Yeah, that's why I always say this. Like, when I read people that are posting these, like, fanboys comments on, like, on Twitter and basically disrespecting others just because they either have a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox or something that they don't have or they don't like. Or, you know, like, it's just stupid because, honestly, now is a great time for people. Thank God that we're all alive and seeing this type of, like,
isn't it a great time to be alive? My God.
Yeah, it is a great time to be alive.
Man, I'm telling you.
It's a great time to be alive because we have a lot of options. There's so many games. Technology is getting better. Other companies, that especially indie companies, are coming up with games that we've never seen before. It's very innovative that third-party companies hasn't even taken a chance to do something like this, you know. But at least we have options. Hey, you like PC? Go with PC. You like consoles? There's plenty of consoles you could go and buy out there, you know. But games are getting a lot better. Yeah, there's some that's kind of eh, but that's a good thing about us. We have the choice if we want to buy that, if we want to invest on these games or not. You know, basically, vote with your wallet. If you like something that is cool and unique and you feel that needs support, buy it. The more you do that, the better it is, competition-wise. It's great for the industry, you know? And I feel that dissing each other and basically bashing other people based on what type of console they have is not helping our community. It's not helping our industry, you know? I think that it's better for us to just support each other, learn from each other, and just have fun with this, you know? I think we have a big community, and just give games a chance. Like, if there's something that's kind of like, I don't know, should I try it out? Talk to other people within the community and just buy it and support it, you know? I think it's great if we do that. You know, I think we should promote more of that than just, hey, someone is failing, their games is not selling, you know. That just, it's just sad in my opinion, you know.
Yeah.
So,
and if you have that kind of passion and you have, you know, that urge to get your voice out there, do it constructively. Give them feedback, give them criticism. I mean, like, exactly. That's what they want. They don't want to see your profanity laced insults and their threats against their lives, and that makes them go, well, what is wrong with these people? Who am I making these games for? It's for the people like us who actually have the time to willing to dedicate to our passion, our favorite hobby out there. We want to make it better. So we have the platform now with social media and, you know, with hopefully more connected PR groups, you know, in companies, you know, out there. You know, we can name names all we want, but there's plenty of companies out there that really make that extra mile to making sure that they have a good community relationship. So if you're part of that community, you owe it to yourself and your fellow gamers and the industry as a whole to take that time, you know, that 5 to 10, 15 minutes to go ahead and write out a lengthy description of what you think is wrong with this game or how it can be made better or, you know, what you think is missing or what you think they should be focusing their time on more based on, you know, past successes or past failures. I mean, I see this everywhere. All the forums I go to, all the Reddits and GameFAQs and InfoGs out there, there are some people that really are so passionate about gaming that you would think this was their full-time job, but it's not. Literally, they have the time to go on the internet and write these amazingly detailed, articulate descriptions of what they think either a game, you know, could have been, should have been, or is. And I'm like, these guys are great. They need, developers and publishers need to read this. They need to be a connection between them. I just really hope that, you know, the marketing, the PR, you know, the QA side of the industry is really taking a good look at some of this feedback out there because it's fantastic. It's just you have to look for it. And the people that are writing it, you know, take that extra moment to go ahead and email it to the contact information of your favorite company, because trust me, they want to hear from you. You know,
your
feedback is everything. I mean, we love talking about games. But, you know, the guys that can sit there and write those paragraphs on paragraphs of just like, you know, I really can specialize in this one field. I have something to contribute into that field so other people can either understand it easier or the developers can understand what they have to do to bring in a new audience. And that just gets me really excited to read cool feedback like that. So I hope that, you know, you guys write that out there, get that out to your favorite developer and publisher, make sure they read it. And if you're a developer, publisher, listen to this, look for this stuff. It's more than just Facebook and Twitter. Check the Reddits, the InfoGs, the GameFAQs, the other forums and message boards out there. There is some really good feedback out there, and you guys need to collaborate more because that's how we get better games.
All right, so we're going to wrap it up. Maya, this was a pretty good episode.
Yeah, right?
Plus it, good one. It's just us two. That's awesome. See, Paris, Pete, we got this. We got this. Yeah. So, yeah, head over to GamerTagWare.com or play that it. Listen to our past episodes and share with your friends. Give us a call. 76-273-7GTR. That's 76-273-7GTR or fanmail at gamertagware.com. Yeah, just send us more emails, more content, more voicemails. Sometimes if we don't read your question, is because there's also other people that send the same type of questions, and it just doesn't make sense for us to read the same ones over and over. You know, it just, we tried our best to pick like the best questions that we see or best voicemails, and we play it or read them on the show. So, but please continue, because I think I love, this is like honestly my favorite part about the podcast. Forget about the interviews, forget about the roundtables of like stuff going on and stuff. I just love getting emails and voicemails from listeners, because they have stuff, they have questions and feedback that we probably never talked about on the show. And it creates a great conversation and great roundtable discussions within the whole crew, you know? So anything else, Pawson?
Yeah, this is going to be random as hell, but did you get a chance to try one of these hoverboards over Christmas break?
No, I don't plan to do that. I don't want to be falling like
Dude,
Mike Tyson.
Dude, I got to say, like, one of my little cousins got this. It's the most fun thing you've ever tried. Danny, you have to try one of these. I felt scared as hell, too, but I didn't fall. It's the sketchiest thing you'll ever learn how to do as a grown man, but it's so fun. So like, I had to look up online. These things are $600. So they cost as much as an Oculus Rift for one of these things.
Did he bought like the expensive ones or the cheap ones?
Are the $600 ones expensive or cheap?
I think that's the expensive one. Okay. I think it goes up to like $700 to even $1,000.
I guess he got a nicer one. It was Hoverboard 360 was the brand name. So I had to look this up right now because I remembered how much fun I had. Because I basically was like, hey, kid, I know you got this for Christmas, but can I use this the entire time you're here? Because like, you're going to have the rest of the year to use this. And this thing is really fun because the kids, they don't realize it. You know, when you have it as a kid, it's like, oh, take it for granted. As an adult, it's like, I would ride this everywhere. This thing is the future. People just don't realize it yet. So if you have a hoverboard, you know what I'm talking about. But I'm supremely jealous of these things now. So you can keep your $600 Oculus Rift, man. If I have $600, I'm getting a hoverboard. Man, forget my car. Forget bicycles. You know, moving 15 miles per hour random directions is the future, man. I'm telling you.
Pasta, you seen those videos that blows up, though, too, right?
Yes, I have. Okay. Mine did not blow up, though. It was safe. But I can speak to all of them. But like, I hope that drops in price for this year, because I want one of those bad, man. If I can roll around to E3 on that, get to appointments on time, watch out.
I wouldn't recommend I wouldn't recommend that at all. But okay.
We'll see.
Please do not do that, E3
okay.
Pasta.
Okay.
All right. All right, guys. Until we'll see you Monday. We'll be, you know, a couple days out, and then we'll come back Monday and new episode and everything. So we're out. Until next time, peace.
See ya.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week.